Yeah, we're studying Pine Hill Village, which I don't know if you're familiar with it.
You'll have to speak a little louder because as I age, I don't hear.
Okay, we're studying Pine Hill Village.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, which it seems like you're familiar with it.
Yes.
Yeah. So we were just wondering if we could ask you some questions, or
sure.
I could ask you some questions. I'm speaking.
Please do.
Okay. So did you live in Pine Hill Village, or?
No, I didn't live in it. Pine Hill Village was confined mostly to married students.
Mm-hmm.
And in the years after the war, obviously there had been a lot of men that had been out of civilian life for a number of years, 2, 3, 5 years. They came back, they were older. I think the oldest man on campus was 30-something at the time. And also in their time away, the few years that they were gone, they really hadn't connected with women in a significant way, though they were eager to get back and get married.
Mm-hmm.
And the social, cultural ethos was that women should get married too, learn how to cook, have children, take care of the house,
mm-hmm.
left over from the 30s. That happily has changed over time. So the point of that is that there were men eager to start life, have a family, get married. There were women who were eager to start life, have a family, get married. And so the college had to, well, it had traditionally been a no married students. The years right after the war were married students accepted on campus. For a while there, they tried, if I remember correctly, they tried to say that only one of you could be going to Carleton, and that seemed a little strange, and I think that got changed over a while. Pine Hill itself, as a structural area, had started, I think, before my time. I came here in 1946.
Okay.
And Pine Hill was already there, and I think it started during the war when Carleton played host to some different military programs. I think there was an Air Force program in meteorology, and they had a number of students here who were soldiers in the Air Force at the time. I don't think we had a separate Air Force. The Air Force was under the Army at that time, if I remember. I may not. At some point it got shifted. And so during the war, you know what a Quonset hut is?
Yes.
Okay. In England they call them Nissen huts, N-I-S-S-E-N. So you had these hoop-like buildings there for the soldiers in these programs. And I think there was a Navy program here too, at any rate. And they were up on the area we call Pine Hill now. Mm-hmm. And I don't remember how many of them were there. There were also standard box-like buildings, two or three on campus that weren't Quonset huts directly on the campus, but those weren't for residences. Each of these Quonset huts was X yards long. I have no idea.
It's okay. We have pictures of them.
Okay.
So we can find out the exact dimensions. Sure. Don't worry about that.
And there'd be two apartments in each. Mm-hmm. Coming in from the ends. And it was usually a living room with a kitchen, bath area, and a bedroom. Some of them got kind of tight should children arise, which under the circumstances wouldn't be uncommon.
Right.
So who lived in them? The married students did. And mostly the students, the married students' men were students. Not as many women were students. Some of men coming back had married their high school girlfriend, and but the man got into Carleton. The woman may not even have applied to Carleton. So there was a different culture, I think, amongst young people at the time. It wasn't well, what I'm about to say, landscaped. You walk around the campus now, it's really quite nicely landscaped.
Beautiful.
At that time, with the Depression before the war, then the war, and then these buildings just sort of put up there, there wasn't too much. But there'd always be some couple or one of the two somewhere around. There'd be one Quonset hut that would just be lovely to see, all sorts of flowers around it and bushes, where somebody in that Quonset hut had wanted to bring a little beauty into their lives. I happened to be one who came here on with the GI Bill, fresh out of the Navy. There were, of course, a number of men and women who had not been in service, and there was a kind of gap in terms of their cultural interests.
Okay.
Those of us who've been in service felt we wanted to get through college, get on with our lives, and we wanted to really not play around. Then we had, of course, here a number of younger, 3-year gap maybe between the veterans and the non-veterans, who were probably more interested in enjoying college life than getting through college.
Right.
And so there was that kind of cultural gap on the campus. There was many of us, though, male veterans, lived in the dormitories too. We all weren't married and living in Pine Hill.
Right.
On the other hand, our friends, the clique that we would go around with, hang with, tended to be our fellow veterans up on the hill.
So there was intermixing despite the cultural differences.
Good point. Indeed, there was. And something else did that encourage that, too. The people on the hill, the married couples, did not have to take meals in the dorms. That was more expensive. And indeed, in the dorms at that time, it was family style. You had to dress, have a jacket and dress and on or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then the each table had a person at the end of it, and that person would take and put on plates would be passed around, and that person would put the food on the plate, and it would go around again, go back to the person who had sent the plate up. And you didn't go through a buffet line, anything of that sort. And so you had to eat what was in front of you. Well, a lot of us had just spent a few years eating what was in front of us, and we had no desire to do that. And many of the brides, women up on the hill, on Pine Hill, were learning how to cook. Many knew already, many didn't, but the most delightful evenings were those where one of us living in the dorms got invited up to have a meal with one of our friends up on the hill.
Oh.
There was another distinction too. Carleton had two fraternities at that time. They were local fraternities. Okay. I think one was called the Adelphians, and the other, the Philomathians? I'm uncertain about that.
That's okay.
The Carletonian of the time would pull somehow, and I suspect our archives do have Carletonians.
They do.
Back.
Yeah.
so it'd be kind of fun to read some of those. It's one of the issues at the time was those of us who'd been in service to a large extent were not in favor of fraternities. And those who hadn't been in service and were a few years younger tended to be in favor mm-hmm. of fraternities as part of college life.
Right.
And so there was a considerable discussion in, I don't know, 1940s, 7, 8, 9. And finally, the college agreed and the few people remaining by the end of that period of time in either of the two fraternities were no longer as much in favor of fraternities as they had initially been.
Mm-hmm.
And so a fraternity disappeared from the campus. And it's one of the things that I happen to be very much in favor of not having fraternities or sororities here. But I don't think there were, I think there had been a sorority, but that was probably decades before, and I don't remember there. So there was that distinction of regarding the campus life. The other thing was that another thing was distinction that the veteran students really felt that they wanted to make a difference when they were back here, and they would try to wherever in life they ended up, but as long as they were here, what could be done to improve or change things. And so there were issues like social rules, the doorways, what am I talking about? Tell me.
Doorways, tunnels.
Tunnels, yeah. Where you open houses.
Oh, okay.
There's something. Men were in one dorm or in certain dorms, women were in other dorms.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. There'd be open houses in the women's dorm at certain hours on certain days, and men could come over and visit.
Oh, okay.
But they couldn't be in that dorm other than those visiting hours that time. And so that was one of the sort of changes in the social mores of the institution as the veterans came back and said, this is a little silly for us to be having these rules. And there were a number of such rules that had been left over from probably the 1920s or 30s, and no one had really worked to update them.
Mm-hmm.
But that would be one. There were hours, too, that you had to be in the dorm. You couldn't. You had to be in by whatever it was, 7:30 on weeknights and 10 on Friday nights and 11 on Saturday or something of that sort. But
very early.
Yeah.
7:30 on weeknights.
Well, then you got up in the morning too. You were going to get breakfast. If you were going to have breakfast, you had to get up in the morning.
Right.
There were hours for that too. What other? Well, and there was some expectation of dressing appropriately. For men, for meals particularly, they had to have a jacket on, a sport coat, something like that, trousers, shirt, certain times ties, as I recall, particularly on Sunday. As part of the changes that were going on, that changed too. Both instead of the what they called family-style dining, where mm-hmm. father at the head of the table would fill the plates and pass them around,
mm-hmm.
We shifted to served, where waiters would come and pop a plate with food already on it in front of us. And then we shifted to buffet dining, where you'd pick up the empty plate and walk a line and fill it yourself. And there was quite a bit of discussion as over a decade or more as which of these approaches should we do. And now, of course, we have this where there's quite a variety of choice that you have as a student in eating instead of just having what was in the buffet line or what was brought to your table for you. Students began protesting the uniform code, the clothing code for food meals, and there would be these exceptions. People would, instead of wearing trousers, would wear shorts, and then they'd get shorter and shorter. They might wear a tie because it didn't say you had to have a tie on a shirt, so they wouldn't wear a shirt and they just had the tie.
Oh my goodness.
Down. And so over time, we reached where we are today.
Right. No dress code. People show up in pajamas. Do you think the college shifted to serving in the dining halls in order to create jobs for Pine Hill Village people or just students in general?
I don't think it was to create jobs. I think the result of shifting was more to be able to go through meals without a great deal of leisure so that classes could be scheduled easily. Classes at that time were 50 minutes. Later they became 70 minutes. I don't know what they are now.
70.
When I had classes here, we'd usually run about 2 hours here, yeah. But it would be senior seminars, and there'd be 12 of us usually seated around here, and we'd have food and drink, and but that was after Pine Hill. No, I don't think it was to create jobs for people on the Hill. I think it was to facilitate scheduling of meals and classes. And in the process of scheduling that, that made it a little easier to move away from those clothing rules too.
Mm-hmm.
So people wouldn't have to go back to a dorm and get a tie on or bring a tie along. what questions come to your mind? I'm not so sure or that I'm covering what you might want.
You're covering exactly the information we need. Mostly, we just wanted to know, for people who did not live at Pine Hill Village, what the campus culture was like, if it felt like having two different communities, or if Pine Hill was sort of integrated. And it seems like there was intermingling between the two communities, even though there was... there's distance between the two.
Yeah. It's a good question. And I think there was some intermingling, class-linked, but I think social life wasn't as much intermingling or even mingling. take Saturday night.
Mm-hmm.
Up on the Hill, sure, there might be a little party going on, or more likely one neighbor had another neighbor in. But for most of them, you know, the male particularly had been off leading a varied life, some of it really very unpleasant in the war. A kind of social life. He didn't feel the need to... be as active socially as the non-vet students did. So you found on the Saturday, there'd often be a dance in the old gym,
mm-hmm.
And often with a student band playing, not rock and roll, that had not been invented yet, thankfully. A big band swing.
I love that.
I do too.
Yeah.
I do too. how come you love it? You're too young.
Call me an old soul. I guess my parents listened to it, and I just picked up a taste.
Sure.
But we have this thing called Midwinter Ball on campus, and they have a big band, and everybody who has taken ballroom classes for PE credits like breaks out their moves.
Oh, sure.
So I guess hearkening back to older times, but yeah.
Well, that was the music, you know, this was the 40s and 50s, the great era of big time music, big swing music. Well, at any rate, there'd be dances on Saturday night, and some of the people on Pine Hill would come down as couples, some, not too many. They stayed home. They were glad to have a night at home. He had been studying hard, hadn't been used to studying for 3 or 4 or 5 years, and felt the pressure to study more, and it took probably more time to do any given task, study task, than it might have if they had come fresh from high school and were kind of used to doing studying. So there was this separation in social life. And again, not complete. There were people on the hill who would come down and go to the dance on Saturday night. And there were occasionally people from down who would go up to Pine Hill, be invited up for some event, maybe tied to a course where the Pine Hill host was in the same class with the dormitory student, and they were working together on a project, although there wasn't as much working together. Mm-hmm. From what you said, it sounds as if this is two or three people that are looking at Pine Hill.
Yes, it's there's three others in my group.
Mm-hmm. I happen to think that's a good idea, because in much of life you're going to have to work with others. Some will pull their weight, others won't pull their weight. And how you handle that, it's good to have a little practice in it. But there would be that. But it was tended to be more separate. It was the unusual minority case of dormitory inhabitants heading up the hill, or people on the hill coming down for the Saturday events. Now, the many of the women did get jobs on campus in the years when they were discouraged from being students here. But the jobs were not created to provide a job to the women. It was just that they needed to have the job filled.
Yeah.
And there weren't department secretaries, for example, full-time doing two or three departments the way we have today. Faculty did most of the necessary work. If letters had to be written, they'd pound them out on the typewriter themselves. If things had to be... Well, I started teaching here in 57.
Mm-hmm.
I'd went to prepare some materials, sometimes a case study, sometimes a mathematical, arithmetic problem set in economics, and sometimes exams.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to type it up on a special paper. I'd go to a machine, which was sort of pretty much like the top of this table.
Okay.
I would put the thing I had typed on it. I'd bring a handle down, and I'd go once like that. And then that would provide a copy.
Well, oh my goodness.
I'd lift that copy off and set it there.
You'd do it again? That's so time consuming.
Until I had enough for the class and the exam for the students. And we didn't have the technology that we have today.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't have the staff that we have today. Now, if I want something done, well, now If I want something done, I go to the department secretary and give her a master and say 50 copies by 10:15 or something like that.
It's done.
And it's done.
Yeah.
So there were some, the greater the distance from 1945 and the end of the war, there was a slow movement toward secretaries. And it began with women secretaries during the war, mm-hmm. or right after, I should say, not during, because there weren't too many women around during the war. I think there were around 200, 300 girls here during the war. And at that time, excuse me, that it was thought that most of these, there wasn't as much scholarship aid, so these were students who could afford coming here.
Mm-hmm.
We had, as one evidence of that, an equestrian program for the
yes.
horses. But then, as married students began appearing after the war, and we had more revenue coming into the college, and didn't. With the GI Bill, we were assured of payment.
Mm-hmm.
The college was assured of payment from the students, male students, vets, and all. The college began hiring people on a part-time basis. Often the wives would be such. When I came in 57, we had gotten through the wives, the Pine Hill, as a co-ed married housing was closing down.
Mm-hmm.
The buildings were being carted away. Student help came in. We were now encouraging a greater range of students to apply, and many of them did need some financial aid, and so work jobs were provided for them, and it was typically secretarial work and lab work and library work were the three. My first office was in the basement of Scoville Hall, and at that time there were 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. There were 8 offices in the on the outside, and in the middle was an area called the bullpen. And each of these offices had a faculty person in. And the college provided a secretary, one student, at a desk in the bullpen for 8 to 10 hours a week to do all the secretarial work for the 8 of us.
Wow.
There. And as you can imagine, the secretarial work wasn't always done. And we had problems. Should a student be preparing an examination that will be given to other students? Will there be pressures put on that student by her colleagues and classmates? Hey, you're working in. But at any rate, that got us away from. You raised the question about women. I had a roommate my first year. I went to Carleton.
Mm-hmm.
My first year here, who had been in the Army. I'd been in the Navy. But he, the summer after my freshman year, our freshman year, Joe got married to Martha, his high school sweetheart.
Mm-hmm.
And they moved into Pine Hill. And so I could count on one good meal a week. She was a pretty good cook. That was not an uncommon pattern. There were some who came here on their very first year. They were on Pine Hill and already married. And some of those had been married before they went into service. And so there were a few children around,
mm-hmm.
Too.
What was your impression of what the women and children spent their time doing?
Well, think of Pine Hill as a little kind of village.
Mm-hmm.
They were all young. They were comparing cooking, learning to cook. They were comparing children's illnesses and joys and preparation, teaching, training. And of course they were doing the laundry. They didn't have the laundry there.
Mm-hmm.
They were doing the shopping to get food for their family and doing the cooking. It was a busy life, and they formed little like a nursery school where one or two of the mothers would mind the children of other families 1 week, and the next week some other mothers would mind that same set of children, so that the wife would be freed up from all of them having to work doing their own thing. They'd have some free time,
mm-hmm.
maybe to take clothes down to the laundromat without having to worry about where their child was.
Right.
Maybe to go to the grocery store.
Most wives were homemakers.
Yeah.
And there were a few instances that we've come across of veterans who met their wives at Carleton.
Mm-hmm.
So the wives were Carleton students,
mm-hmm.
and they were able to take classes. But it seems like the wives of veterans who were not Carleton students didn't really take classes here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's true.
Okay.
Yeah.
My
memory of it, for example, I don't know whether she did take classes. No, Joe Logan, who married Martha,
mm-hmm.
I think that they weren't married in his freshman year. They got married the end of it. They moved into the Hill. I think the first year here, her first year here, and maybe more, she wasn't a student. But I think either the third or the fourth year, she did take courses here. And I don't remember what her name was, other than Martha.
That's okay.
Yeah.
That's all we needed to know, just that there were courses available to the wives who were not necessarily Carleton students.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's so interesting about the nursery school. We've been trying to figure out how the kids occupied their time in Pine Hill Village, and that's the first sort of outlet that we've come across that's a very institutionalized thing put in place for the kids. So,
As I recall it, there were these kind of ad hoc arrangements that a group of mothers might make,
not institutionalized. Okay.
Say the two mothers on either end of a Quonset hut, and maybe the next Quonset over, so there might be four mothers involved in it.
Got it. Okay.
They'd then try to set up a common playground for their children.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. So their kids, I guess the kids were too young to go to school, mostly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. Figures.
No. What else? One of the things at that time, the college expected people to attend Vespers on Sunday night,
mm-hmm.
Chapel on Tuesday morning, which would be a rather short. The president, the man for whom this house was built, Larry Gould, would read a service from the Book of Common Prayer, an Episcopalian book. And then Fridays was a convo, a secular convo, much as we have today.
Yeah.
And there was a, one of the problems of Parkinson's disease is that it affects the vocal cords. It causes my problem of trying to clean my throat
out. That's okay. I don't mind at all.
Yeah, thank you. the married students felt that they shouldn't have to go to Sunday Vespers or Tuesday chapel. And some wanted to, and some didn't mind going, and others did mind. And so just as there was a desire to get rid of fraternities, there was a desire to get rid of required Vespers and required chapel.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, I don't know just when they disappeared, but I know my job in my senior, I started in the, my job, students did have jobs, including those of us who were veterans.
Mm-hmm.
I started out in what was called the slop chute at that time. I was the first geyser man, where the dirty plates came in and I did the initial wash off of them, and then I went on to the second geyser man who did a more thorough job, and then the placer in the machine.
Mm-hmm.
But at any rate, by the senior year, I'd become what they called a proctor, the dean's team, and I one of my duties as assistant to the dean of men was organizing and running the chit system, C-H-I-T, chit system, for determining attendance at Vespers at chapel. And on Friday, you had to still go. Then that was 1957.
Wow.
It was at that time that we got rid of the required chapel, and then got rid of the required Vespers on Sunday. That was a distinction between those on Pine Hill and those in the dorms.
Mm-hmm.
Because the dorms sort of had the impetus, the pressure that, yes, you're not on Pine Hill, you're here in the dorm. People in the dorms go to Vespers, they go to chapel, mm-hmm. and they go to Friday's convo. And the people on the hill, I don't think they were, it was formally permitted that they needn't attend chapel. But that's the way it worked out. And ultimately, those disappeared.
Right.
Anything else that leaps to your mind?
No, you've answered my questions thoroughly, given me so much good information. Is there anything you want to ask me? Or,
yeah.
I think we're all good.
Yeah. Well, one of the interesting questions to my mind,
mm-hmm.
Would be, why did the college eliminate Pine Hill and married students?
Hmm. Based on our research, it seems like married veterans, after they graduated, or let me rephrase that. The amount of veterans coming to Carleton was so, the number of them decreased so much in such a short period of time,
mm-hmm.
that the Pine Hill Village settlements were no longer fiscally beneficial to the school. So they had to start renting Pine Hill Village Quonset huts or houses out to people who didn't go to Carleton. Mm-hmm. So it was sort of becoming an even more separated part of campus, and at this point it wasn't even Carleton students living there.
Yeah.
So the school just decided to get rid of it altogether because mm-hmm. it wasn't adding anything to the community.
I wonder to what extent financial aid might have played a part, as the GI Bill became less significant in providing aid, which provided almost the total cost of going to college,
mm-hmm.
At that time. And as veterans disappeared from the application pool, the college chose to provide financial aid, would accept people who needed financial aid. although not all who needed it got in, even if they were bright. The college didn't have enough money for that.
Yeah.
But there was aid, financial aid, that slowly became available. And why would that? Well, there was always a fuzzy problem with married couples, that for those who, or maybe the wife, took courses, should she get aid? Should she be simply let to take a course without any payment on her part?
Interesting.
Yeah. And so the complication of financial aid for married couples, I think, was one of the factors that led to not admitting married students anymore. And then for a while, there'd be a one or two couples that were married and nobody knew about it. Presumably
secret.
Nobody knew about it, but you know, they're married. And then, of course, marriage didn't become quite as significant as it is today in a variety of ways. And each person, whether male or female, stood on their own in terms of getting financial aid, depending on their family's background and funding. The requirement that the college eliminate, the college's decision to eliminate married couples, and for some of these reasons, I think, probably led to the decline of Pine Hill.
Mm-hmm.
And then they could have put men in those dorms too, or women, and one set men in another. That's a possibility. But by then, the quality of the buildings themselves left something to be desired too. That's what's called deferred maintenance. They hadn't kept upkeep on those buildings, knowing that the war would end and these buildings would probably be sold off ultimately or disappear. So they were expensive housing and expensive for heating too, mm-hmm. in our winters. The housing themselves disappeared. Those that were in reasonably good shape were bought and trucked away.
Mm-hmm.
Those that weren't in good shape were demolished.
Okay.
And that was true of the few box-like buildings that were on campus, too. There were three or four of those, but they weren't for housing. They were for classroom space, student activity space.
So they were demolished.
Mm-hmm. Well, this sounds interesting, and of course, it's probably due last night.
No, we it's due June 4th.
Oh,
so we have a little time.
You got a little time.
We have a little time.
Yeah.
Yeah, but we would love to send you the finished product if you'd be interested in that.
I'd love to see it.
I think it's a website, but I can come over and show it to you if you want.
Okay, remember, I don't have a computer.
Yeah, so.
But I would appreciate seeing what you came up with.
Okay, I will.
In any way you could arrange it.
Yes, I'll be in touch. I can email your daughter, call you, and just mm-hmm. pop over and show you
sure.
what we come up with.
Oh, that would be wonderful,
yeah.
Sarah. Yes, thank you.
Yeah, here we go.
How are we doing on time?
We're good.